There was a famous scientist who wrote an autobiography, and he entitled it, "I Seem to Be an Active Verb." And that sums up a lot of the ways in which the Buddha treats you, that you are active. The mind, he says, is not just sitting there receiving input from outside. Even before we see things or hear them, smell, taste, touch, think about them, there's already a lot of activity in the mind going out. The Taijans call these the currents flowing out of the mind. Your intentions, your perceptions, your plans for things, all these have an impact on how you're going to receive that outside contact. And it's these activities that are prior to contact, those are the ones that are going to determine whether you're going to suffer from that contact or not. Even the suffering itself, he says, is an activity. He equates suffering with clinging. Clinging is the act of feeding on things. So we're not simply on the receiving end. We tend to think of ourselves as receiving suffering from outside. We're the ones who feel the pain that comes from something that's come to hit us. But here the Buddha is saying something else entirely. That's because of the way we act that we suffer. Now, he's not saying that you shouldn't act at all. After all, there is a path, and the path, too, is a path of action, like we're doing right now. We're acting on the present moment. We're shaping it, so we're trying to learn how to shape it well as part of that path, bringing the mind to the breath. Keep thinking about the breath, evaluating the breath. How does it feel right now as you're breathing in? Questioning the breath. What's going on right here? What are you doing? How are you relating to the breath? You're trying to bring the breath and the mind together. Both of these are activities. The way you breathe is an activity, the activity of the mind, the perceptions, the thoughts. How do you get them to stay together so they're acting in concert? That's the skill we're trying to develop right now. Because when they act together, then you become more sensitive to them. As if the mind is lots of little minds, and they're all headed out in different directions. They don't know one another very well. But when you bring them all to the breath, you begin to see, oh, this is how the minds work. They can watch one another. As you focus on the breath, you notice that there's a perception in the mind that helps you stay there, an image that you hold in mind. What kind of image do you have? Is it a useful one? One that's really useful as the mind begins to settle down. It's not so much that the breath is coming in from the outside, but there's a breath energy that originates in the body at any of the resting spots that Ajahn Lee describes, above the navel, the tip of the breastbone, base of the throat, the palate of the mouth. Those are just a few. Notice when you breathe in, where does the energy seem to emanate from? When you hold that perception in mind, your sensation of breathing will change. And you find it easier to live with the idea that as the mind begins to settle down, the breath gets very, very subtle. Sometimes it gets so subtle that it seems to stop. You know, if you feel you have to suck the air in from outside, the mind is going to panic. That'll destroy the concentration. But if you remind yourself that the breath energy is something that originates from inside, and when the mind is really still, the brain uses very little oxygen. And so the body will breathe only as much as it needs to. The more quiet the breath, the greater the sense of stillness inside. All of these are things we do, the perceiving, the breathing, the thinking. We're trying to bring them together here in a way that gives rise to a sense of well-being that's solid, and also that allows us to watch the mind and see in which ways we are creating the suffering. The Buddha equates suffering with clinging to the five aggregates. The aggregates are form, feeling, perception, mental fabrication, and consciousness. And all of these the Buddha defines with verbs. Form, he says, deforms. In other words, the form of your body is nothing static. Then feelings feel. Pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain. Perceptions perceive. Thought fabrications fabricate. And consciousness cognizes. These are all verbs. And we cling to them. The act of clinging is also a verb. We've got verbs holding on to verbs. What that means is the activities that we'd like to do repeatedly. The problem is that all too often we get some measure of pleasure out of them, but there's also a lot of suffering, a lot of stress that we create, and we tend to turn a blind eye to the stress. The Buddha's here asking us to turn and look at it. There's stress in the clinging, in this repeated having to hold on to particular activities. And he points out four. One is clinging to sensuality. That's our fascination with not so much sensual things, but with our sensual fantasies, plans, resolves. Like, have this pleasure, like to have that pleasure. Well, no, maybe how about this one? We can design them, our pleasures, as we like. And in the realm of our imagination, we have pretty much free rein. This is what the Buddha says we're attached to, much more than we are to the actual objects, which is one of the reasons why we suffer so much. So you get into relationships with someone else, you have these plans and those plans about how good it's going to be, but the person is actually something very different from what your plans are. That's one of the ways in which we suffer. And the suffering over, the Buddha says, habits and practices, the ways we do things, we stick to them. We have certain habits that we're pretty convinced we're not going to change. And sometimes we even believe that certain habits, certain rituals, or certain ways of behaving, if we just behave ourselves, will guarantee that we'll be happy. But all too often they have very little to do with happiness at all. It's simply that we're familiar with them. It's like an old shoe that's not very good for your foot, but because you've worn it for so long, that's what you're used to. And there's clinging to views, particularly views about the world. It has to be this way, should be that way. This includes views about politics. You can get all fired up about those and create a lot of suffering for themselves. And then finally, views about yourself, the way you define yourself. You're this kind of person, you're that kind of person. You exist, you don't exist. As the Buddha said, when you define yourself, you limit yourself. I've known people who say, well, human beings are simply conditioned biological organisms. Well, yesterday I read about someone saying that we're all algorithms. What can an algorithm know about the deathless? What can a biological organism, which is caused and conditioned, what can it know about the unconditioned? Once you define yourself like that, you place huge limitations on yourself. So these are some of the ways in which we cling, in which we suffer. And the Buddha said, if you learn how not to do these things, then you don't suffer. That's his basic solution. Now, the solution, however, is strategic, because if you look at his path, there are views and there are habits and practices that he recommends, and then even ways he has of recommending that you see yourself that are provisional as part of the path. Because the path does involve some clinging. It too is an activity. The only thing the Buddha doesn't recommend is sensuality. This fascination we have with what kind of sensual pleasures we want. He says, just put that aside. But with the other three, learn good habits and practices. You learn the practices and the precepts. You learn the habit of practicing meditation, practicing concentration, you have views about action, that you do have some freedom of choice here in the present moment. The Buddha's awakening. It's interesting that they talk about how he saw the universe in the night of his awakening, beings dying and being reborn from all different levels of the heavens all the way down to the hells. There are very few descriptions of the heavens and the hells in the canon. The Buddha didn't go into describing those things. What he did do when he summarized his awakening was to boil it down to a principle of causality. In other words, the principle that lies behind our actions. And one of the main features of that is that even though your past actions play some role in shaping the present moment, they don't play a total role. You do have some choice here and now, which is why we're able to follow the path to begin with. If everything were predetermined by past actions, you just have to roll along with the results, whatever they were, and you wouldn't be responsible for what was happening right now. But the fact that you do have some role in shaping right now, that provides the opportunity for us to practice. So that's a view the Buddha has us develop. And also the view that it is possible through our actions to arrive at something where there is no action, where there is no conditioning, where there is no fabrication at all. That's something the Buddha has you take on as a working hypothesis. That's the view. And as for your sense of self, he doesn't define what you are. Sometimes you hear it said that the Buddha defines you as those five aggregates, but he says, no, that's what you're doing. You're defining yourself in terms of those five aggregates, whichever activities you hold on to. Sometimes you identify yourself with your feelings, sometimes with the images you have in your mind, sometimes with your thinking, sometimes you identify yourself with your body, or a combination of any of these, or just simply your awareness. So that's not how the Buddha defines you, though. But he does tell you to have a sense of yourself as competent. This is a path you can do. Have a sense of love for yourself, in the sense that you don't want to act in any way that will cause you harm down the line. And if you really care about yourself, you also aren't going to cause harm to any other people at all, because if you harm them, then there's going to be trouble coming back. If your happiness depends on their misery, they're not going to stand for it. So identify yourself with the thoughts in the mind that say, I want to find a happiness that is harmless. I want to find a happiness that is reliable. And have a sense that you can do this, that you can depend on yourself. You can develop the qualities. You have these potentials within you, that you can develop them so that you can find that happiness. These are assumptions that the Buddha has you take on about yourself. So the path does involve some clinging, but it's provisional. When you've completed the path, then you can put it aside. And your sense of who you are, you can put that aside at that point. In fact, everything gets put aside. Everything gets dropped. In awakening, there is no clinging at all. In fact, that's how awakening happens. It's from lack of clinging that people find the deathless. But you have to cling to the path to get you to that point. What this means is you keep doing again and again the things that the Buddha recommends, the activities that he advises you to do, the habits and practices, your views about the world, those are activities made out of thoughts and perceptions. Your sense of yourself, that's an activity too. You try to do these things in line with the Buddha's recommendations, and it'll take you to a spot where you can finally put them aside. The image in the canon is a person taking a raft across a river. You have to hold on to the raft so that the river doesn't wash you away. But once you get to the other side, you don't have to pick up the raft and carry it on your head. You can just put the raft there at the side. You can go your way. is once you've solved this problem of the way you make suffering, then you're free. There may be other issues you want to take up in life, but the big issue has been solved. And it's big, the big issue, because if you don't create suffering around anything, there will be no suffering in your mind at all. Nothing from outside can come in and make you suffer. So when the Buddha says we suffer in the clinging, it does throw some responsibility on us, but also gives us the freedom not to suffer. Because if the suffering were coming from outside, there are so many things outside that we can't control. Suffering would never end. But because it is an activity we do, and it's an activity we don't have to do, that's why it is possible to have a path to the end of suffering.